A new sex scandal at the State House, why Judd McMillon resigned and what it means for Brian Bosma. Democrats in the General Assembly endorse John Gregg, and Chuck Brewer puts out a jobs plan. That plus tributes to Bill Crawford, the fever in the finals, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 2, 2015. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, there's a new sex scandal at the State House, and House Republicans are looking to elect a new majority leader.
Judd McMillon, meantime, is trying to put his life back together, according to a message posted on his Facebook page. In it, he says, "I make mistakes, and I'm doing my best to remedy them." It follows an apology sent to some people on the contact list for his phone, a message that says the phone was stolen in Canada. He wrote, "I am truly sorry for anything offensive you may have received." It's a reference to a sex video that led McMillon to resign his seat in the General Assembly, as well as the number two leadership post in the House of Representatives. Sean Eberhardt of Shelbyville is one of the three lawmakers mentioned as a possible replacement as majority leader. He's considering a run. So is Matt Lehman of Bern in northeast Indiana. Kevin Mahan of Hartford City is also mentioned as a possible candidate. Judd McMillon defeated Mahan for the post not quite a year ago.
Did Republicans make a mistake picking McMillon in the first place? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, how surprising is this development?
Unfortunately, based on his past conduct, it's not all that surprising. I mean, I know this is the excuse for the reason that he's resigned now. And obviously, it's salacious, okay? But I don't view that as serious a concern as I do the earlier problems that he had with using his office for personal and family financial gain. And I think those occurred before his selection as majority leader.
He was alleged to have done that.
He was alleged to have done that. But it is also clear that the committee that voted on the item had a grant which benefited his family directly. Okay, I mean, I think those concerns, the potential abuse of power for financial gain, are more concerning than this particular one. Although, as Rex has always said, you know, there are hypocrites and there are hypocrites, or hypocrisy. The fact that he pushed the RFRA to protect traditional families when he's out doing this, you think to yourself, you know, where's the disconnect?
There have been ethical questions about his behavior in the past, including a circumstance 10 years ago before he was in the General Assembly where he was accused of sexting. And when he was elected majority leader, a lot of people wondered about the wisdom of that choice. It's easy to look back now and say it was a mistake, but...
Well, I mean, first of all, the guy was duly elected in his district, so the people of that particular district sent him to the State House as their representative. I hate to see anybody, any member of the legislature, get caught up in this kind of stuff, show this kind of bad judgment, and, you know, especially in this case, because this guy had a lot of talent, a lot of ability. He probably could have eventually been Speaker of the House somewhere down the road. And so I hate to see it happen. But, you know, I think he did the right thing in resigning. because clearly he needs to spend his time trying to repair what damage he's done to his family, even if that's possible at this point. And it's always bad. You know, we've had legislators on both sides of the aisle involved in this kind of behavior, and some of them have quit and some of them haven't. And I think he made the right decision so that they can move on in that district and in the legislature.
Yeah. One of the interesting developments this week was that Brian Bosma put out a statement thanking him for his service before he put out a statement saying he'd resigned. I mean, is that a way of saying don't let the door hit you?
Well, I'm sure there's an element of that. But it's going to be hard probably for the speaker to wash his hands of this completely as the person who, as you pointed out, Jim, installed him in this position.
He was the speaker's choice. It was a contested election
for
majority leader.
Right, but with some encouragement, I presume. And that's what that does cause one to leave you scratching your head a bit because of the instances that you mentioned, and against the backdrop of a flurry of these sorts of things, you know, whether they were sexual in nature or perhaps conflicts of interest in the financial arena. We've seen a flurry of these in the House over the past 5 years or so. So you'd think that there'd be a heightened sensitivity to perception. We did see a heightened sensitivity. We saw Democrats and Republicans come together last session to say that ethics reform is our top priority. So you would think that this might have gotten a little more
serious attention,
earlier on.
Any moral here, or is this an individual case?
Well, obviously it's an individual case. I think John makes a good point about the number of these kinds of things we had. We had a Democrat have that similar situation earlier in the session. We had the situation with Eric Turner that led to the reforms that John was talking about. And you want to think that there's greater integrity than what we've seen in the General Assembly. The public has a right to understand and appreciate that and deserves that. I think that Representative McMillan has done the right thing here. I do think those questions that had dogged him to the point in hindsight probably should have been paid attention to, but he was elected. And he was elected twice, once to the leadership post. So it's very unfortunate that this has worked out. It does cast aspersions on the House and the General Assembly, but I do think it's an individual thing.
All right. As you said, McMillan is the second member of the House GOP leadership team to leave under an ethical cloud in less than a year. It's a potential problem for House Speaker Brian Bosma, who punished Eric Turner before he stepped down last year. McMillan was Bosma's choice for majority leader, and he declined an interview request following McMillan's resignation. Mike McDaniel, what's the political damage to Brian Bosma here, if any?
None. And this is not something that would have any damage to Brian Bosma. First of all, he was not his handpicked candidate for this job.
I've been told that by people in the caucus.
I've been told by people in his caucus that everybody runs for these positions. And as usually is the case, you'll have two or three people that will run. And they start calling their colleagues to see if they have the support for the job. And then once they find out that maybe somebody else is in the lead, then some of them drop off before they ever go to the post on the day of the election. And that's what happened in that particular case. And that's what's probably happening right now as they prepare for next week's election. So, and most people have no idea what the majority leader does anyway.
Mostly he carries out the speaker's wishes, right?
It's too inside baseball for the public to really get a grasp for what it is that they do. And so it's does it have any effect on him? No, because they do run for this individually, and that's the way it's always worked, and that's what it is. His vote is the same as everybody else's in that caucus.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to put as much distance between himself and Judd McMillan as he can possibly get. But within the last couple of weeks, he was telling the caucus members to circle the wagons around Judd because Judd had this all under control. So, you know, you've got a situation here where Brian Bosma thinks of himself as a statewide candidate. He toyed with the idea of running against Pence. He toyed with the idea of getting in the Senate race. And this is the kind of judgment call where two members, I agree, nobody knows what the House majority leader does. That's right. But House leadership, in conjunction with Brian Bosma, and Brian Bosma there, it seems to me, presents a problem for him in a statewide election.
It has the making of a political ad, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I would argue that it has more implications for the caucus at large than individually for the speaker, in the sense that you can say, look, this is what happens when you get a supermajority. They don't take it as seriously as they should, whatever the case may be. The thing is mitigated, however, by the scandal that was on the Democrat side earlier this year, and so it's harder for that ad.
Justin Moed,
it's easier. He wasn't in leadership.
He didn't resign either.
But all of these things are slicing and dicing, and the impact of any ad that might have come from the McMillan case is diminished by the other situation.
I don't think so because of the ethical problems with Turner and arguably the ethical problems unrelated to the sex with McMillan and putting them both in leadership positions and then having to have them back off. I think it's a bigger problem than even the sexting.
I agree with you, though, that the other problems, the potential conflicts or apparent conflicts of interest were, as you suggested a few minutes ago, a much more
serious problem
and certainly a bigger threat to the institution and the reputation of good governance in the state of Indiana. But it's these kinds of things, the sexting, that it does become the fodder for ads because we don't know all the details. I don't know all the details, but just enough for people.
We don't want to know all the details.
Well, that's probably true.
Let's get that off the table here.
Just enough to know that this is the kind of thing that creates a buzz. I mean, I've heard far more people talking about this, sadly, perhaps, than had talked about the apparent conflicts of interest or Eric Turner's situation with his actions.
Do you agree he should have resigned?
Well, I think in this era of not to do it would really be a cloud over the institution.
Should Bill Clinton have resigned?
Sexting
hadn't been invented back then. I don't know.
We don't know how it's different actually at this point. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: does the Judd McMillan scandal hurt Brian Bosma? Your choices are A, yes; B, no; or C, not for long. Last week's question: who's the favorite in the 2016 race for governor? 81% said John Gregg, 19% said Mike Pence. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Democrats are trying to send the message that they are unified in the effort to defeat Republican Mike Pence in the 2016 race for governor. House Minority Leader Scott Pelath and Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon called a news conference this week to report that all of the Democrats in the General Assembly are now on record in support of John Gregg. It's something that hasn't been done before. Here is Pelath, followed by Lannon.
On this particular point, the views were strong and consensus. It is time to rally around John Gregg.
Indiana needs a change in the governor's office, and John Gregg is that change that our state needs.
John Katzenberger, what's the hidden message there?
The hidden message? I think it's fairly obvious.
Are they worried that there isn't enough support in the Democratic Party for John Gregg?
I don't think that's the issue.
I think that there are a number I think that there are more liberal elements in the party who are not happy with the stance that John Gregg has had in the past on marriage equality and on women's issues. And so I think they are doing what they need to do to coalesce. I think that that's exactly what they're trying to do. I think you'll probably hear from the candidate himself pretty soon about his evolution on some of these issues. And I think that they recognize that they have an opportunity to defeat an incumbent governor, something that hasn't been done since we've had consecutive terms in Indiana. And I think that they want to do all that they can to make sure that they have their best opportunity for that, and that's what this is.
Well, they're also saying outright that if you're a Democrat and you're thinking about running for governor, don't.
Yeah, that's the message, and I think that the few folks who were still out there toying with it, Mayor Hammond and others, had gotten the message and said, you know, it'd be a tall order to try to play catch-up at this point. You know, and John's right, there are factions within the Democratic Party who probably would like to see maybe somebody with an even more progressive track record. But the prospect of winning and unseating an incumbent for the most powerful office in the state of Indiana is a pretty good antidote to any sense of misgiving. And I think the prospect of a victory and the desire to claim that victory is clearly a stronger force than any misgiving.
It trumps.
Do you have any doubt that these guys were backing John Gregg?
I mean, this story cracks me up. I mean, come on. I mean, the headline on this one ought to be "Super Minority Endorses Their Only Candidate." I mean, what? You know, it's not exactly breaking news, okay? And so, and what's funny about this to me is some of these very people that are involved in this are now saying they're endorsing John, where the people who are working the hardest trying to go out and find somebody to run against him. And so I'm sure John appreciates the endorsement from these folks, but he knows deep down inside some of these were the very distractors that were trying to get at somebody for the very reason stated here, because they don't like the fact that at least before now, he's run had some traditional views on some issues that are important to a lot of Hoosiers. Now he's evolving as we move forward, but yeah, these very folks who are trying to take him out are now saying,
He didn't show up for that endorsement.
Hoosiers have evolved over the last 5 years on this issue as well. We talked about how the polling indicated how attitudes towards same-sex marriage had progressed over that five-year period, so it's not surprising. You know, the Democratic Party is a big tent, okay? You can always find somebody who's favoring whoever the nominee is. Heaven knows when Evan Bayh ran, you could find people who didn't think that he was good enough as well. So the point is that this is more about the work that John Gregg has done to solidify his base, and he has worked very hard at that, of getting everybody on board early to make certain that he's not going to have primary opposition. You know, Republicans are still talking about somebody who has a number above 35 to challenge Pence as well, but we'll see whether that happens.
Moving on. Chuck Brewer released his plan this week for creating jobs in Indianapolis. The Republican candidate for mayor spelled out a seven-part proposal in front of the downtown soup shop that he owns and operates. It includes a call to spend more money to attract conventions. He wants to expand the convention center and increase the budget for Visit Indy, but he gave no specifics.
It's hard to disagree with the math. The convention business here in Indianapolis is an incredibly high performer. And when we talk about returning a three and a half multiple on every dollar invested, it's a good deal. And we need to look at every opportunity we can to leverage our dollars.
John Schwanis, does he need to be more specific?
I guess I could be somewhat flippant and say, would it matter? Because it's, again, this race is really marked, I think, by a dramatic disparity in the name identification and the political profile of the two candidates, not to mention the war chest that each has accumulated. And that means that
Joe Hogshead's been on TV for months. Chuck Brewer's on cable.
Exactly. And that means he could be as specific. He could have put out something akin to, you know, War and Peace in terms of its length. But I'm not sure alone would have made a difference if you don't have the money.
But that's my point, though. When you speak of War and Peace, he put out a seven-part proposal that's tough to put your arms around. I mean, doesn't your messaging need to be a little more pinpoint?
Well, now you're hitting him from both directions. it's not enough, but it's too specific. The problem is exactly this. He can have the plan. The plan's always got to be the basis of this. But whenever you're going out and talking about the plan, you hit the highlights. And the problem is he can't buy the media to get enough attention to bring to the comprehensive plan that he may have. So he's really stuck because of his lack of resources. You can have the best plan in the world, but if nobody sees it and nobody hears about it, it won't make a difference.
You got to have the message before you get the media, though.
Okay, so he's got the message. Where's the media?
Well, I'm not sure he's got the message, is my point.
Well, it doesn't matter, okay? Fundamentally, it doesn't matter. He may have the best ideas in the world, and it doesn't matter, okay? He's lost the election.
This plan was a very well-thought-out plan. I thought there were some great ideas here, and it's the kind of thing that we ought to be having a discussion about in a mayor's race, especially in a city like this. I have not seen a lot of great ideas on the economy in Indianapolis from Joe Hogshead, and I thought there were some very creative things here, and I thought that was stuff that you could actually take what we already have and build on it which is a great starting point for anybody that wants to run for mayor of a big city like this. And I thought it was very well done. It's just, like you said, the problem is getting the message out there and the resources. But, you know, if he'd done Gone with the Wind, as John referred to, you would have complained about that. And when he puts the bullet points out there, you complain about that. So he's not going to win either way on that one.
The most publicity he got for it was that story.
Well, the other problem is, in addition to the lack of funds to get the message out there, is a lack of
funds
dramatic,
to do it.
Right. Well, a dramatic contrast between his views on economic development and job creation and his opponents, because you have a situation where his opponent his opponent's been endorsed by the chamber and other business community, so it's not as if you have somebody who's seen as a threat to the business community running against somebody who's a champion of the business community. It's not that stark, and that hurts Brewer in terms of a lack of of a contrast.
Bill Crawford served 40 years in the Indiana General Assembly before retiring in 2012, and he's being remembered as the longest-serving African-American state lawmaker in the country. Governor Mike Pence placed a wreath in front of the Bill Crawford's casket at a viewing in the State House Rotunda. A banner on it read, "Chairman Crawford," in honor of his service as chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. It was in that role that Crawford served as a mentor to a number of young people who later moved on to careers of their own. I asked a few of them what they remember most about Bill Crawford. Here is Teray Dabney, followed by Tammy Butler Robinson.
His humility, his kindness, his gentleness, his love for the people.
One day he told me, he said, if you agree on objective, don't fall out over methodology. And that's what he always did. He would, you know, figure out a way to get it done. And if it didn't happen the first way, he'd figure out another way.
The last memory that I have of Representative Crawford was that he was just a giant in the community, just always engaged in the community and that presence.
And that's State Representative Robin Shackelford, who replaced Bill Crawford in the General Assembly. Mike McDaniel, what's Bill Crawford's legacy?
Oh, a true champion for equality and fairness and justice. And in the 40 years I've been around the State House, I don't think I've ever witnessed a legislator who worked harder for his constituency and really fought for the needs of that constituency better than Bill Crawford did, and treated everybody with fairness, was always a gentleman, and was respected by everybody. And we lost a great leader when we lost Bill Crawford.
He preached involvement, and the people he mentored kept saying this week that one of his favorite lines was, "If you're not at the table, you're on the menu."
Mm-hmm. And for how many years was he at the table? But the most telling thing about his tenure there, he was one of the most powerful and effective legislators, but he never forgot where he came from, and he never, never forgot who he represented. And that was always at the table whenever he did negotiating, and that's much to his credit.
You know, sometimes when politicians want to command an audience or make a point, they just crank up the volume, figuratively and literally, and that's, they just try to drown out everybody. That was not his approach. By being soft-spoken and gentle, as was a word that was used here, he was able to command that audience and get people to turn their heads and listen because of his soft-spoken, very reasoned approach to a lot of these things.
And because he got all these people involved, his legacy will endure.
His legacy is long. And don't forget, he was a lion in the civil rights movement in Indianapolis from very early on in the 60s forward. Mm-hmm. Bill Crawford's legacy is assured.
Finally, the Indiana Fever are the Eastern Conference champions headed to the WNBA Finals. There was a welcome rally at the airport this week after the team beat the New York Liberty 66-51. Tamika Catchings scored 14 points and made key defensive plays late in the game. The All-Star says she appreciates everyone's support.
Thank you. A little bit tired. But thank you guys for coming out. We really appreciate your support. All season long, you guys have believed in us. Every single round, every game, whether we win or lose, you guys are still by our side.
We just want to really thank you guys for coming. Like Kat said, we're going to get back to work. Get ready for Minnesota so we can kick their behind.
Can appreciate the home video there. And Delaney, will the Fever win the finals?
I hope so. I mean, with Tamika Catchings and Stephanie White, it's a great team. But it's also, when you're talking about legacies, important to remember that but for Birch Bayh and Title IX, we wouldn't have the opportunity to be celebrating these kinds of things.
I think that's true. Stephanie White, homegrown, first rookie coach to make the finals.
It's a great story. They didn't play well parts of this season when they were dealing with injuries, but now all I got to do is win one in Minnesota and come back and win it here.
Go Fever. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.